Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and on today's show, I'll be talking with one of the funniest men in television history. The Carol Burnett Show's Tim Conway will be here to discuss his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. After that, we'll feature a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris about the patience of God. So stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is TV legend Tim Conway. Everybody knows Tim from his years on McHale's Navy and The Carol Burnett Show, from movies like The Apple Dumpling Gang, which was a favorite of mine growing up, and from his popular Dorf videos. But how did this man, who's made so many of us laugh, develop a sense of humor? And what role have God and faith played in his life? Tim shares stories about his life and career in the book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. To share some of those stories with us today, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Tim Conway. Tim, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you.
Now, in the foreword to the book, your friend Carol Burnett describes you as, quote, quite shy, which may surprise a lot of people. So when you were a kid, was entertaining your way of getting beyond the shyness, or was it just a natural extension of who you are?
I think when you are as short as I am, that people do point to you and go make funny remarks. And I was always the weakling in college, as far as messing around with big guys. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the question was, but the answer was long, wasn't it? And that's what we're interested in, is time.
That's fine. Well, from reading the book, it sounds like your parents, Dan and Sophia, you found them very funny. But did you find them funny when you were growing up, or was that only in retrospect?
Yes. No, they did silly things, and I appreciated it at the time.
Right. Well, your father seemed to be ahead of the trend when it came to home brewing his beer. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, he made home brew. We would be in bed at night and start hearing these caps being blown off the bottles because he bottled it too much with too much yeast. And so the ceiling in the kitchen was always all beer and dripping. And he was not a master brewman. By any means.
Well, I know you say in the book that it's your nature to see the glasses half full. Was it because your father had a lot of half full glasses around the house,
That's
maybe?
Right. No, he never left a half glass.
Oh, no.
He would empty it.
Okay. Yeah. And how did your mother respond to all that? Did she have a sense of humor about it?
I think so, yeah, because she was the one who had to paint the walls. So, she did.
I'm talking to Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. Now, did the fact that you had dyslexia, did it also contribute to the fact that you made people laugh? You had a sense of humor? You used it to...
I think in high school, or even in grade school, my getting up to read, people couldn't wait, for me to be called on, because I would put words into sentences that were never there, and they thought I was being funny, I guess, so they would laugh at me, and I just kind of continued that through life.
Right.
I'm going on 80 now, and I'm still doing it.
Wow. Well, you incorporated the word jackanapes into this book, which is the first time I think I've seen that word in all the books I've read in the last several years, so congratulations on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you picked it out.
Absolutely. Now, you didn't have the luxury of growing up with parents who had a lot of money to spare. They worked hard to earn their money. You worked hard to earn yours. Do you think that hard work was a good lesson for you as you went through
Absolutely,
life?
Absolutely, yes. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have money. It was depression time. Mm. And my coming through that period was always kind of rough on parents, not only my parents, but anybody who went through that period.
Sure.
I'm sure, and you ate strange things. Nobody would identify them at the table, but I'm sure there were muskrats in there.
Sure. Well, you got these down-to-earth parents living through the Depression, they're working really hard. So how did they react when you said you wanted to get into show business?
I never told them. I kind of slid into it. I didn't want to get into show business. I wanted to be a jockey.
Mm-hmm.
And at this weight, even the horses ask you to get off. So I fell off a lot. And also, people betting on you would like to see you on the horse when it comes across the finish line.
Understood.
And I learned that rather rapidly. So, no, that was my first choice, to be a jockey.
Okay. Well, I know you share in the book that when you were doing McHale's Navy, your mother wanted you to quit and work at the hardware store back in your hometown. Did she ever accept your work as a success?
I don't think so. Yeah, she called one day and said, you know, Jim Shutt down at the hardware is taking on new help and everything, and you know him rather well, so you should apply. And I said, have you been watching television in the last couple of years? But, no, she said, that's never going to last. So. And she was right. Yeah.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. Now, since this is a Catholic radio show, I have to ask you about the spiritual path you took in life, beginning with your Romanian Orthodox baptism that you almost escaped from. Tell me a little bit about the role God has played in your life.
Well, they put the child on a little bed, I guess. Yes, close to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And while the priest was walking around the table with my mother and father, hanging on to this prayer scarf,
mm-hmm.
As they were walking around, I actually rolled off the pillow that they had me on and rolled under the table. So when they stopped, my dad looked down and said, "He has risen." And the priest said, "No, he has fallen." So they picked me up and put me back on the pillow.
So that was the beginning of your relationship.
That was the beginning of my blessed life.
Your blessed life. Now, you also share a story in the book about a football injury that resulted in you and Jesus staying in, quote, constant touch. Tell me what happened there.
Well, our fullback ran into my back and cracked a vertebrae.
Oof.
And years later, the doctor, when examining me for something else that had nothing to do with the back, said, you know, you've got a cracked vertebrae. He said, you are very lucky that you're not in a wheelchair or totally paralyzed. So I became, yes, ultra religious at that point. Yes.
Okay. Was your journey of faith after that a straight line or a little crooked here and there?
Well, all straight lines get a little crooked from time to time.
Sure.
But no, I try to maintain a decent life.
Right. Now, I know you converted to Catholicism because of a girl you were dating, which I think probably happened to a lot of people.
Yes.
And one of your first jobs was at the Newman Club, a Catholic social club. Do you think that was a sign God wanted you to get into comedy?
I think He was pointing in that direction for me. Yes.
Okay. I'm talking to Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. Now, in the book, you write about your first real comedy gig at a club in Seattle, which it didn't end too well. What happened, and where do you find the hope to keep going after the letdown?
Well, it started out that we were another friend of mine and I were entertaining, and we were standing on a bar and entertaining people. At least we thought we were entertaining them, but nobody was actually listening. And my first investment was in a tuxedo, and I have no idea where that tuxedo is today, but obviously it's not still in use by any comedian.
Right.
But I really didn't want to get into the business, so I wasn't seeking that, but it just kept going in that direction.
Right. I know you had a partner named Ernie Anderson, and I know you were invited to be on the Steve Allen Show, and he wasn't. But he insisted that you do that. How did Ernie's selflessness and humility affect you in the long run, you think?
We were friends up till the end. Because we were working together in Cleveland, and I really didn't want to leave him. because I was having so much fun in Cleveland. We had the worst show in Cleveland. We were to run a movie in the morning, and Ernie was the talent. I was the director. I had never directed, and Ernie didn't have that much talent that we could display it. So, yeah, we would get reviews like, you want to see Stink? Watch this in the morning, you know. So we were pretty well known.
Right, right. And what happened now? I know Rosemary got you your big break on the Steve Allen show. What happened after that to kind of keep you moving in that direction? Did you just keep getting hired and hired?
Well, I would be the guest on Ernie's show every morning because nobody would want a guest on it because it was so bad. So she said, I was watching your program this morning. She came down to the station and said, I was watching your program this morning. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I said, well, we don't intend it to be funny. We're fighting for our lives here. And she took a tape that we had made of one of the shows and took it back to Steve. And he said, God, this guy's got something. So he brought me out, and at the time Don Knotts, Louie Nye, Tom Poston were all on the Steve Allen show,
right.
And I jumped in with them.
Right, right. Well, Jane Scovell, your co-author, points out that you were always happy to be an ensemble player and not really comfortable being the star. In a town like Hollywood where egos can get big, how did you hold on to your humility?
It wasn't hard. I never went to any great heights in the business, so...
You're a comedy legend, though.
Oh, am I?
You are, I promise.
Let me tell my family.
Well, I mean, what was it? I mean, you really got well-known with the Carol Burnett Show, and I was surprised that you weren't a regular until, was it, what, season 7 or something? You were just a regular guest star,
well,
right?
And Carol said, why don't you be a regular on the show? And they did 33 shows a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll tell you what. I'll do 32 shows and leave the last week open for any guesting I want to do. So I would do 32 shows, and then I would guest on the same show. So I was actually doing 33 shows.
Well, now you give a lot of credit to her as being a really likable and successful leader of that show. What was it about
absolutely.
Her? How did she
with
run?
Carol?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's the best. She is so generous, and not only with her time, but, you know, in helping people. And so it was the perfect slot for me because I was poor at the time.
I'm talking to Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life, and his time on the Carol Burnett Show. You also describe Carol as a graduate of the Gary Moore University of Good, Clean Fun.
Yeah.
Do you think there was something more pure about comedy in those days when it didn't kind of veer off into...
You didn't have to worry about swearing or anything like that, or nudity or anything. I miss that, but, you know, what are you going to do?
No, I remember growing up watching Johnny Carson, and whenever Buddy Hackett was on, who could be a little risque in his act, he had to clean his act up for Johnny's show. And I remember, to me, it struck me as being more creative than the other way. Do you think that kind of...
I think so. It takes a lot more thought to be funny without... all of the, swearing and things of that nature.
Sure.
That always gets a laugh, you know.
Right.
It's not good when you're sponsored by a church.
No, I couldn't do it on this show, but...
right.
Now, staying with the Carol Burnett Show, why do you think you and Harvey Korman clicked so well?
Well, because I could put him on so much. He never got the fact that I was putting him on. And so sometimes it would go on for days or weeks, you know. And when he finally found out, he would stop talking to me. And so we would go months without him speaking to me. But, it was he was an easy target.
Mm. Now, since Harvey passed on a number of years ago, and I know since you're a believer and you believe that this life is not the end, do you ever still talk to him as if he could hear you?
Oh, yes. And he hasn't worked since he's been in heaven, so I'm kind of anxious to see him again.
Well, what did your friendship with Harvey suggest to you about God having a sense of humor? Do you think God has a sense of humor?
Oh, yes. I think that God has placed me in several positions which, you know, I have found humorous. And I find humor in life itself. And I can hardly wait to thank him in person.
Well, you want to stick around. I know you said you're getting close to the big 80, but we want to keep you around a while yet.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, I'm not going to ask you what your favorite story from the Carol Burnett Show is or favorite sketch, but if you could tell us about one of them that really sticks out in your mind.
I think the character that I came up with in Dorf, the guy who... I had the shoes on my knees, and one time we said, you know, because I would get on my knees and put the shoes on my knees, but I said, you know, if you buried me in the ground, the bottom part of my legs would be gone, and I put the shoes on my knees, it would look like I'm just standing there. And so they we were doing a golf tape, and they put me on a fairway and buried me in a fairway and then took the camera way back, you know. And a dog came out and took a leak on me.
Was that intentional or not?
No, it wasn't intentional.
Okay.
I think it was an opinion of the dog and the humor.
Well, even with the Carol Burnett Show, a lot of times you guys would you know, wouldn't stick to the script. Mistakes would be made, but they were kept in because they were funny. How were mistakes a good thing in your world?
I think that was definitely part of the show. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we couldn't wait for somebody to screw up so that we could point to them and point out the fact that they had screwed up.
Right. And any stories of screw-ups stick out?
A lot of them have got me in trouble, but
okay.
For the most part, most of them were pretty innocent,
right.
And nobody got hurt. Yeah.
Right, right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. One of the recurring themes in the book is gratitude. You mentioned being thankful several times, and you don't seem to take your good fortune for granted. Is that gratitude a result of your upbringing, your faith, or the lessons you learned along the way?
I think it's my upbringing. My parents were, one was Romanian, one was Irish, and so they had some ideas about how children should be brought up, and they were the kindest people in the world and most supportive. And so I wouldn't do anything to offend them. I you know, the language or
sure.
to do anything in real life that would offend them. So we got along very nicely, and I thank them for bringing me up the way they did. They showed me the right road.
I remember the story in the book about how you did a little shoplifting thing once when you were a child, and your father kind of taught you a lesson about that.
Oh, yes.
Would you share that?
I took a screw out of a bin in one of the hardwares, and when I got to the car, I said to my dad, you know, look what I got. I got this screw from the bin in there, and my dad said, let me see it. So he took it, and he got out of the car, and he went to a policeman, and the next thing I know, this policeman is knocking on the window, and he said, excuse me, what is your name? I said, Tom Conway. And he said, did you take a screw from the hardware store? And I said, oh, my God, I thought, boy, these guys are really sharp, you know.
Yeah.
Bought everything. So I said, yes, I did. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. If you're going to do that again, I'm going to take you and put you in jail.
Mm.
So my being about 6 years old at the time, could only picture me growing old in a jail. So I never did anything after that. And my dad came back to the car, and he said, "What did that band want?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I said, "I don't know." My dad could see, and he said, "Did you wet your pants?" And I said, "Yeah." he said, "Is there anything you should tell me?" And I said, "No. I just promise I'll be a good boy after this."
And that was the end of your shoplifting days.
Yeah, the end of my shoplifting and my criminal life.
Did you incorporate anything, any ways that things your parents taught you when you were raising your own children?
Oh yes, yeah. I think this is a certain gentleness that you can show to children,
mm-hmm.
that rather than smacking them or, you know, moving them around, as my dad used to say,
mm-hmm.
I think you can, as my parents did, you know, they taught me a lesson.
Yeah.
When that guy showed up with that screw and said, "Did you take this?" I thought I was going to have a heart attack, you know.
Right, right. Now, people know you're creative on stage, and what the book reveals is you're also a creator of sorts when it comes to sewing outfits for your grandkids or making them tables and chairs. Where did those talents come from?
Well, my mother was a seamstress, and she made slipcovers and things of that nature. And I kind of picked up on sewing, and the next thing I know, I was making clothes that you couldn't wear.
And do your grandkids appreciate them?
Oh, yes. They don't fit, but what are you going to do?
Now, what inspired you to write your memoir right now at this time?
I didn't realize I was writing a memoir, and I just started writing one day, and at the end of the third day, there was the book.
Well, in our closing minute, you know, what do you want people who read the book, what do you want them to come away from it with?
To better know what my outlook on life was.
Yeah.
And I hope a lot of people have an opportunity to take the same route I did, and to see life as humorous and enjoyable. And I hope they're blessed with children, because I have six of them, and if they're not blessed with children, I'd be more than happy to give them a couple of mine.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking with Tim Conway about his book, What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life. Tim has provided us all with decades of laughter, and he continues to do so with this book. But it also shares the heart of this good man behind the laughter. So please pick up What's So Funny if you want to read a book that'll leave you smiling. Tim, thanks so much for writing the book and for being on the show today.
Thank you. My gosh. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'll be back in a minute with a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
When Father James Keller founded the Christophers, he chose the organization's name because it means Christ-bearers in Greek. He wanted to encourage everyone to discover their God-given talents, combine their faith with action, and change the world for the better. For ideas on how you can be a Christ-bearer in your own life, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Being a Christopher. It's filled with quotes and insights from Father Keller himself, who once explained, "The presence of even one Christopher in any environment is a blessing, a channel of grace, and a step in the right direction. It's like a tiny pinpoint of light that is greater than the encircling darkness." To request your free copy of Being a Christopher, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and next we have a reflection from Father Jonathan Morris. This week, Father Jonathan shares some insights about the patience of God using a personal story about an encounter he had with a beggar who, quote, won the Jesus lottery. What does that mean? Well, let's hear what Father Jonathan has to say.
Hi, I'm Father Jonathan Morris, speaking today on behalf of the Christophers Organization. In this weekly reflection, I would like to talk to you about the patience of God. And what that means for you and for me. The patience of God. Have you noticed that in your life, I've noticed it in mine, that God always seems to have certain moments that are meant just for us? We call them God moments, moments in which the light bulb kind of comes on and says, wow, I need to change, or wow, God is close to me, or gosh, this has been a tough time, but God was always by my side. Not too long ago, I was in Penn Station. That's the real busy station here in New York. And I was waiting for a train, and I was with a friend of mine, and I was just dressed in lay clothes going off to the beach. And a gentleman came up to me and said, hey, can I get some money for breakfast? Maybe I'm a little bit hardened being a New Yorker now, but I said, you know what? I will not give you money for breakfast, but I will buy you breakfast right here. And he said, no, I'm sorry, but I don't buy my breakfast here. I said, well, I'm going to buy it for you. He said, no, because I buy every morning a low-fat bran muffin with whipped cream on top, and I can only get that down the road. Probably out of laziness, I finally just gave in, maybe because I was so impressed with his creativity. I dipped in my pocket thinking I was going to pull out a dollar or two. The only thing I had was a $20 bill. By this time, I was already committed. And I just felt an inspiration, you know, maybe I should just give him a chance. I said, here, take this money, but bring me back the change. He was shocked. The guy at the table next to me was thinking, oh my gosh, this guy must be from the Midwest. Clueless. About 5 minutes later, this gentleman came up, not only with the change, but with the receipt. I said to him, sir, you don't know how much you've blessed me today. I am a Catholic priest. And he said, what's that? I said, well, it's kind of like a pastor. And he said, you a minister? I said, I'm a minister. He got down on his knees and he raised his hand and he said, I won the Jesus lottery. I won the Jesus lottery. It was a God moment for him. My guess, it was his chance to embrace a God who was calling him to conversion, to make the tough decision, the virtuous decision, the patience of God. He knows how to wait for us. And when his moment is right, when we're ready for the moment, it's time to say yes. Thanks for following me on these weekly reflections. For more of these and for more information about the ministries of the Christophers, go to www.christophers.org. God bless you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.